As you write your life story, you're far from finished. Are you looking to close the book on your job? Maybe turn a page in your career? Be continued at the Georgetown University School of Continuing Studies. Our professional master's degrees and certificates are designed to meet you where you are and take you where you want to go. At Georgetown SCS, the learning never stops, and neither do you. Write your next chapter. Be continued at scs.georgetown.edu/podcast.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
I just want to give you guys a heads up that there is some light cursing in this episode. So if you have little ones around or you're listening at work, you may want to put in headphones.
Hi, I'm Wendy.
And I'm Jess, and you're listening to the Food Heaven Podcast,
your online resource for inclusive and accessible wellness. Welcome back. We are hitting y'all with another episode. Skincare is something that we're both particularly interested in because, you know, we don't have much of a skincare regimen. I think for Jess, it's gotten a little more evolved in the recent years. I'm still figuring it out. Honestly, I usually just use whatever samples companies send my way. But today, our guest, Charlotte Palomino, is coming through with so much information about skincare. She is the CEO of Do, which is a clinically vetted and price transparent skincare line. You might have seen her videos on TikTok, on Instagram. She just has so much information to share. She's a wealth of knowledge. She's formerly written about beauty, culture, and food for publications like Elle, The Cut, Cosmopolitan, Bon Appetit, and more. And Jess, what are we going to be covering today?
I also want to point out that she's not just a writer about skincare. She is a licensed esthetician. So she has done the research, and this is a very sciencey episode in the best way possible. So get ready. We talk about everything from what should a basic skincare routine look like? What are the three essential skincare products everybody should invest in? How the clean beauty movement is kind of BS and not fully rooted in science. She has a really great take on that. And even some of the popular organizations that people get a lot of their information from might not be the best source of what is, quote, good or bad for your skin. We go into genetics because Wendy and I talk about how we literally just started washing our face a couple years ago and how before that, like our skin looked fine and how majority of that is genetics. We even get into this idea of anti-aging and where does this all come from, how it's very problematic, and where do you find the balance between, you know, protecting your skin and also not getting sucked away in all of this, like trying to maintain a youthful appearance for the rest of your life. Another thing we discuss is, are there foods that can affect your skin? This is one of the most common questions we get asked as dietitians, so we set the record straight today. We also get into everything from sustainable marketing, why that is not as straightforward as you think, and Charlotte has a very spicy take on that, which we love. And then, of course, most importantly, how to get your partner to wear sunscreen. That is my biggest challenge. And she gave me some tips that I think will actually work. So you definitely want to make sure to stay until the end of this episode because we're also giving away our favorite eye masks of all time. Me and Wendy both wear an eye mask every single night. And this one is great. You guys are going to love it. So stick around to the end to hear how to enter to win. And we're going to give away three.
Before we hop in, want to highlight a listener review. This one is from REXX. They write, I've been following Jess and Wendy for years. They've been putting in the work to educate and ensure their space is body positive, body neutral for all, which is so important and appreciated. Thank you. Give them a listen to learn about nutrition and laugh along. Thank you, Ari, for leaving that review. Y'all, please take a second, go on iTunes. You can also go on Spotify. Leave us 5 stars, preferably, and some sweet words if you have an extra minute or two. We really appreciate you taking the time. And we are going to get into today's conversation. We have so many questions for you because you're so knowledgeable. But first, tell us about how you got into skincare.
Absolutely. So I'm the co-founder and CEO of Do, which is a clinically vetted and price transparent skincare brand. But before that, I was actually working in magazines, tech. I was at Snapchat for a while. And while I was at Snapchat, I was spending a lot of time in Los Angeles. And I saw what was happening with cannabis. And I thought it was, I was like, not again. Like we're not trendifying an ingredient that has medicinal properties. And we are certainly not doing that and making money off of it while so many people, largely Black and Brown people, are in jail. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, we cannot be doing this again. But we did. There's still a lot of issues within that industry. I started a newsletter with my co-founder, Marta, around cannabis, destigmatizing it, also talking a lot about psilocybin, and just a lot of what, like, the research that was coming out, which obviously is like, these plants actually do have, you know, effects on your brain, which can be positive. So let's talk about what that looks like. And it eventually led us to Joyce Delamos, who is our chief product. She was a clinical chemist. She was doing a lot of the patents for SkinCeuticals, doing a lot of the trials, doing a lot of the formulations. And so we started to talk to her about cannabinoids. And from my perspective, I was like, I want to prove out what works and what doesn't work with it, because the issue with trends is that trends go away. And for many people, cannabis is not a trend. It is something that benefits their life, helps them with pain, helps them with so many different things, even if it's just relaxing. We've normalized alcohol to the point of actual, like, damage. So it's like, you know, destigmatizing that, but also, what does it do for your skin? Like, I'm curious to know. And so we ended up doing clinical trials with Joyce. That's actually when we brought her on fully. And that's really when I started to get into skincare. I got my esthetician's license as a result of it, because if I'm leading a company, I need to understand basic skin histology. Otherwise, like, you know, you're working from a business side, but I think skincare is science, and we always forget that. It's not just about your vision and your marketing. It's really, what is it doing for the skin? And so I really wanted to be able to understand that and to be able to hold my own, at least, like, look like I'm holding my own in a room with Joyce, because she is a genius. So that's really how I got into skincare. It was through cannabis.
Wow. Does your company have cannabis in its products?
In one product. So, you know, and I worked in beauty at Cosmo and, you know, like Elle, and I worked at all those magazines, but it wasn't product development. But Deliverance is our first serum that came out, and that actually has a cannabinoid complex. And the reason why we don't promote it that much is because for us, like, we're not an ingredient company, we're a formula company. Anybody can come out with an ingredient. For us, it's about holistically, how are you looking at it? What's the stability of it? How does it work in conjunction? Are we testing on multiple skin tones so that we can actually make, you know, very fair claims? Are we testing it one time a day, two times a day? What does that look like? And so Deliverance actually was our first product. We're super proud of it. And it is incredible at what it does, which is basically targeting irritation, evening tone, and then just basically plumping out the skin. It's not tret though, right? It's peptides. So it's not going to be as, like, you know, as intense as, say, a tretinoin would be. But I actually can use retinoids and tretinoin because of this product. And it's a nice companion product to it.
We get so many emails every week from people who are saying that they want to meet with a dietitian, but they want someone who is aligned with our values, someone who is weight inclusive, and also who takes an intuitive eating approach. The problem is, people tell us they have a hard time finding someone that they would actually want to work with who seems like they would be a good fit. Also, dietitians can be pretty expensive, and for many, it's not that accessible. I totally get that. I want to tell you about this week's podcast partner who is solving that problem. Way is a mindful eating app that helps people find peace in their relationships with food and their body. They do this through helping you listen to your body using a combination of intuitive nutrition and behavior science. And they do this in a very simple and thought-provoking experience from three pathways. So pathway number one is your body feels. Number two is emotional eats. And number three is mindset shifts. Way creates a safe and non-judgmental environment immediately, and you do not have to worry about stepping on a scale, counting calories. It never tells you what to do. It's literally the opposite of a restrictive diet, and it's completely opposite of so many of those apps out there that say they're intuitive eating and not diety, and they really are in disguise. 74% of people who use Way notice that they're thinking differently about what they eat, or they're actually eating differently, whether that's at the grocery store or even out to eat at a restaurant. I even spent an hour talking to the founder of Way to make sure that they are 100% aligned with our values, and I can tell you confidently that they are. I've used Whey myself. I love it. I give it my stamp of approval as a dietitian, as a weight inclusive dietitian. And if you want to give it a try for a limited time only, when you visit eatmyway.com, you'll receive 30% off your subscription and a 1 week free trial. That's only $6.99 a month for Whey to help you find more peace in your relationship with food and your body. That's eatmyway.com to get 30% off and a 1 week free trial for a limited time. It's a no-brainer. Download the app and try it for yourself. All right, back to the episode. So for people who are like, okay, I don't know what y'all are talking about. This is, used to be me like 3 years ago when you said Tret. I was like, oh Lord, like there's probably a lot of people who are like, what is Tretinoin? I started using Tretinoin. I started using Deliverance. Anyway, we'll get into it. But okay, what is a basic skincare routine, or what does that look like for folks who have no idea what's going on right now? And for folks who do and maybe need to know if what they're doing makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I would say a much more maximalist routine, but I've always had a skincare routine like since I was like a child. And that's actually my grandmother and my marraine that got me into that, which is if you're going to wash your body, you have to wash your face. You know, it's like, I feel like sometimes people just don't bring that up. And it's like, if you shower every day, then why wouldn't you bring that to your face? And I live in New York. It is disgusting here. You walk through the streets and you're like, I'm definitely walking through like a fugue state of like pigeon excrement and like whatever the rats have left for us. So I need to wash my face. Like I sometimes wash my face twice a day, which I don't love doing because I have quite dry skin. But basically, cleansing your skin is a baseline. And when you live in climates like New York that are very dry in the winter, you're probably going to want a moisturizer. You're also going to want an SPF, right? So for me, sunscreen, I use it for two reasons. And I think you need to be really honest about it. The first one's obviously cancer. But the second one is that I am prone to aging based off of sun damage. And so what that means is that the sun has ultraviolet rays, UVA and UVB, and then HEV is high energy visible light. These different rays at different lengths, they actually get deep into the skin and they start eating away your elastin and collagen. And because I am less melanated, I have less activity in like, there's like some preliminary studies that when you are less melanated, you actually have less of that activity. And so I'm trying to protect what I got. And this means sunscreen all year round, right? So it doesn't matter if it's winter. Some people use their sunscreen as a moisturizer. I have what I like affectionately call husk skin. So the basic routine is cleanse, moisturize, SPF, and then at night just cleanse, moisturize. Serums or treatments, right? So say you have hyperpigmentation, say you have wrinkles, say that you want to kind of lessen, say you have, you know, acne, I recommend going to a dermatologist, quite frankly, or an esthetician that really knows what they're doing and has like a strong, you know, track record. That's going to be something more that's treatment based. And that's when you start getting into maximalism.
Okay. Yeah. I love that. Cause there's so much consumerism in the skincare space where, like, you know, I see a lot of skincare influencers and they have, you know, like over 100 products in their whatever, their medicine cabinet. They have a closet dedicated to skincare products. And I'm just like, but who has the money or the time to be like going through all of this stuff? So I love that you broke it down. You said yeah. SPF, moisturizer, some kind of skin wash. Do you recommend a certain number for SPF?
So SPF 30 plus is definitely something that is like recommended by like dermatologists. Like the difference between 30 and 50 is minimal, but it is there. And the biggest thing, actually, the biggest difference between 30 and 50 is that if you use an SPF 50 and if you use a little bit less of it, you're actually getting like a pretty good amount of protection. Because in order for sunscreen to work, you need to be using 2 milligrams per centimeter squared. That's how sunscreen is tested on arms for what we were talking about earlier, which is redness. And so if you're using less than that, you're actually not getting the SPF protection factor. It turns out into like a handful. And so I use SPF 50 because I want every little bit of protection. And, you know, I'm not measuring out in my teaspoon things. So it's more about like a security blanket for me. But SPF 30, if you're using a good amount, is very good protection.
Okay, good. Now, it's common practice amongst me and my friends when the summertime rolls around. We're like, oh, we want to get golden. We want to go to the beach and we want to spend hours, you know, deepening that melanin. Is this a good practice, are we actually just like killing our skin? Should we not be doing this?
Listen, and like, this is probably going to be very controversial what I say, but you know, for me, it is not a good idea. It is not a good idea because I am not melanated and skin cancer runs in my family like crazy. Everybody's had sometimes malignant tumors. Okay. So for me, I tanned when I was a kid and I deeply regret it because I keep getting chunks taken out of my body. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's like not, you don't, it's like, I'm 35. I'm like really young. And so it's scary. Okay. Now, if you don't have a history of skin cancer, if you are more melanated, right? If you have that kind of like that protection, while I wouldn't say bake, it's like, if you're outside in the sun for 20 minutes and you get a little bit of a tan, I don't think it's the end of the world. What I will say and what dermatologists have told me is that tanning is the sign of your skin responding to ultraviolet radiation. This is radiation. Okay. So that is damage to the skin and your skin is trying to protect itself. Okay. Everybody's going to have a different level of what they're willing to have in terms of that damage. And some people, no matter what they do, they will tan, right? Like I was in Florida, I'm wearing SPF 50 head to toe, was wearing protective clothing. I somehow still got a tan on my back bike riding. And I'm like, how? And I'm not going to berate myself and be like, oh, I'm ruining my skin. But dermatologists will say this, the sign of a tan is a sign of damage. This isn't to shame anyone. This is literally just the biological response. However, the severity of that is going to vary by person. For me, I think the consequences are much more severe than if, say, you're a Fitzpatrick 6, which is one of the darkest you can be in terms of melanation. It's like, I would not be freaking out if I was a Fitzpatrick 6 and I had a little bit of a tan. For me, I'm like, wait, was that around that weird mole that I had? Because now I need to go to the dermatologist.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. If you go higher than 50, is it more effective? Like, you know how there's like SPF 80, like, does that even
work? Talking about like fractions more effective. And for me, it's like focus. Yes. SPF 50, 100, like there's actually regulations, like in the US, you're not supposed to really be claiming over 60, I believe, just because it's like, it creates like a false sense of security. Oh, if I'm using 100, I don't need to reapply. No, okay. Or I don't need to use as much. Right. And I kind of said that. I'm like, oh, when I use 50, I don't like cry if I don't use as much, like, you know, even though I try to use like a big dollop. And so, you know, I think that the differences are minimal enough. Like SPF 50, you're very protected. If you're using that every day in the right amount, like you are golden. And for me, I only reapply sunscreen when I'm like really playing like outdoor sport. No, I don't play outdoor sports. I mean, like being on the beach. That's like, well, like the recommendation is on the back of the bottle. I'm like, we're working on a sunscreen right now. So I'm like remembering all the regulatory stuff. But, yeah. I don't like reapply, like unless if I'm like outside or like drinking on a boat.
Yeah.
Which
sounds nice.
I want to talk a little bit about sunscreen, a little more about it, because I thought that I was applying a ton. I mean, my face turns completely white. It takes time for it to feel like it blends in, absorbs, whatever. But I'm not applying like a tablespoon. Like, what is an eyeball amount?
It's a fourth of a teaspoon. So it's like a little puddle. Oh, okay. I would say. So it's not like a huge dollop. For me, I do my face, like me applying like sunscreen is like really aggressive because I like to do my skincare routine fast. Like the people who like lovingly massaging, like sometimes I'll do like a buccal massage, like right here, and I'll really get in there because I have TMJ, like, and I will get my hand in there. But it's like, I'm not like one of those people who's like lovingly applying everything and waiting like 10 minutes. So it's like, for me, I just like rub. And so I do my neck and my chest every day as well.
Yeah. Do you do your hands as well?
Yeah. Like I'll take the excess and I'll like do that. And then I also have like a sunscreen in my bag that I use as a hand cream.
Okay. And then for reapplying, like for example, I am working in a home office and there's two windows, like one here, that's like almost the whole wall. Is that harmful for your skin to be in front of a window?
So again, it's like that visible light. If you have like melasma or hyperpigmentation, like part of the reason of wearing sunscreen, it's not purely just for, you know, taking care of, you know, degradation of collagen via UV radiation. It's the fact that it triggers hyperpigmentation and people spend a lot of money trying to reduce hyperpigmentation. It's not a problem for me because I don't have melanated skin. And so when I get a pimple or when I cut myself or whatever, I don't have any keloid scarring, which is actually a beautiful sign because it means that you have like very active like collagen and elastin and like, you know, that activity, which I'm like, it's actually a good sign. And then the other piece is that my inflammation presents as redness, right? Erythema, post-inflammatory erythema versus post-inflammatory hyperpigmentation. Hyperpigmentation is when you have like those dark spots that are like purple or brown or like darker, and they take a long time to, you know, get taken care of. And that's because you have inflammation, and that inflammation is then activating the melanocytes, right? It's all part of wound healing response rates. And so when you have high energy visible light, which is daylight, right? I'm not even talking about burning, right? You're not going to burn. I mean, unless if you're sitting like right in a ray of light, like you're not going to really burn sitting at your window, but that kind of like indirect light, we still don't really know the full effects of that and how that impacts hyperpigmentation. So if you're struggling with melasma, just wear sunscreen, but try to wear sunscreen. They say that mineral sunscreen is better in terms of blocking it for visible light, but there's also plenty of sunscreens in Europe and Asia that also test for visible light. And so that could be technically considered like the PA scale in Asia, right? Which is actually darkening. It's not just redness. They're looking at tanning, basically. That's one test that's done, and it's supposed to be for more like different rays. So like UVA rays, and technically, I guess you consider it visible light, but in Europe, they have one specific claim for HEV, which is visible light. So again, it's like not gonna, I mean, I'm not worried about anybody getting skin cancer from sitting by a window. Again, unless it's like you're in the window and like, you know, when you're driving and you have one side of your face, it's more like people will see more pigmentation, more aging, more everything on one side of their face. That's because the sun is like beating on your face. If you have kind of indirect light, I'm not too worried about it. I wouldn't be too worried about it. I wear sunscreen every day because it's habit and because I don't want to develop melasma, which runs in my family too.
Yeah.
It's hormonal, right? So, but if you can help not trigger it, that's also a vibe. Yeah.
Really quick follow-up question. With, you mentioned mineral sunscreen. So for people who don't know, there are two types of sunscreen, my understanding, mineral and chemical. I have heard from dermatologists, for my dermatologist, to go with mineral. However, chemical for me with someone with dry skin seems to feel better on my skin. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do. I think there's a lot of misinformation around sunscreen. I think that also something, so physical sunscreens are zinc and titanium dioxide, right? They, just like chemical sunscreens, they form a film on the skin and basically they absorb UV radiation, but it's basically not your skin that's absorbing it, it's the filter. The idea that physical filters reflect light is actually like maybe 5% more light is reflected. It's really not like anything to write home about. And so when you're looking at chemical sunscreens, the concern is that some of the filters in the United States, they've been shown to systemically absorb into the skin. Now your skin is a barrier. Very little gets past your skin. And that's why it was like, maybe this, we should look into this more. Did anyone say that it's causing cancer? Nope. Just the presence of something does not mean that it is dangerous. Okay. Just because it's there. Have we been using these filters for a very long time? Yes. Is skin cancer cancer? Yep. Is UV radiation, we know it to be bad. Absolutely. So from my perspective, with my tolerance for risk, none of these filters are being banned anywhere else in Europe. I think that they're being limited. Some of them, like homosalate, for example, in Europe, you can only use it at certain percentages. Whereas yes, in the US, you can use it at much higher levels. So what I would say is if you are concerned and you want the lowest amount of risk, known to mankind, know that, you know, these chemical filters have been proven time and time again to be safe. Sure. Use physical sunscreen if that's something that you want. Understand that the formulas are going to be chalkier. They're probably going to dry out your skin because zinc isn't astringent, right? It soaks, it's like clay. It's like it soaks up the oil on your face. And when you're like us, we don't have any oil to begin with. And I think that also remember, if it's a brand telling you this, they're trying to sell you their version. So be very, very wary. A lot of this information is coming from brands, and some of these studies are did by brands. So we're just kind of like, I'm just kind of sitting here and I'm like, find what works for you, find the sunscreen that you can use every single day. And for me, I do prefer the sunscreen filters in Europe simply because they don't sting my eyes, but I have no concerns about chemical sunscreens here. I coat myself in chemical sunscreens because I can't use physical sunscreen on my body. It takes too long to rub in and I don't like looking like I'm like, you know, a cast member of The Walking Dead.
Yeah. Same. I want to touch on genetics because I feel like there's not enough talk about genetics when it comes to skincare. I can't tell you how many times I've been asked like, oh, what's your, you know, skincare regimen. And like, honestly, up until like 2 or 3 years ago, like there was no regimen. I was barely washing my face. And I'm just like, it's literally all genetics. So can you touch on that?
Yeah. And I think that it's a really good point to bring up, because people always say to me like, oh, your skin is just genetics. And I'm like, yes, a lot of it is genetics. Absolutely. But also, if I didn't use skincare, I know what my skin would look like. And I know what has changed and what hasn't changed, right? Like you have your baseline and then it's like, I'm like, I go either above or below it, right? Yeah. And so I think that another thing people don't think about with genetics is melanin, right? If you have more melanated skin, you are not going to be presenting signs of aging at the same rate. I went to this Dior event for a launch they had, and there's this dermatologist that I adore that was just like so spot on about everything that she was saying. And I was like, thank you for saying it so clearly. But it was like, you know, showing pictures of different people at different melanation levels and how they age differently. And obviously environment and your habits will have an impact. If you're a smoker, yeah, things are going to happen. Not great, but inside too, right? Drinking a lot, not sleeping, like all of those things, like in moderation, like, you know, drinking obviously fine, but I'm talking like if you're binge drinking every day, it's obviously going to have an effect on your appearance, your well-being, your brain, like all the things, right? And so she was showing these pictures of different people. And it's like, if you look at somebody who's 40 years old and black and somebody who is 40 years old and white, that difference in aging is going to present very differently. So me asking, oh, what do you do for your skincare routine? It's like, well, you've had melanin, therefore built-in sun protection. You may have more like layers in your epidermis, which is your high, like top layer of skin. There's some research that shows like there's a different like response with collagen and fibroblasts, which is what keeps your skin from like sagging and keeps it like all together. So there are so many different things, and even just like, you know, practices, right? So if you stay out of the sun all the time, your skin's going to look pretty good. Like my grandmother doesn't use really skincare. She has a tub of Nivea that she's had like, you know, since like the war, and like, you know, she just doesn't go in the sun and her skin is impeccable. And so I think that there are so many layers, like, and for me, people ask me about my skin, I'm like, I've been using sunscreen since I was like 25.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's because that was the first skin cancer scare that my family had. I wasn't using enough. I was using a little bit, but I was still using something. That has a huge impact, the cumulative effect. And so that's why I think like asking, people ask me for my skincare routine because of what my skin looks like. I'm like, ask me because of my expertise and what I know, not necessarily what my skin looks like. Yeah. Yes, it's a byproduct of it, but a lot of this is genetics.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to keep my genetics. I'm like, let's see how far we can keep this going. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. We had another skincare expert on years ago, a dermatologist, and she was saying that everyone has like a different, I don't know if the term was like set point or something, a threshold maybe, where it's like, yeah, maybe you're melanated and your threshold is a little different, but if you don't take care of your skin, like at some point, theoretically, you know, you might, I don't want to say like show some, because it's like, okay, that's another thing too. Let's talk about that. Like the aging thing, because I feel like a lot of the skincare stuff is very rooted in like anti-ageism and like we can't get older and sagging skin and all this and that. And I think especially for women, it's hard, right? Because you have two options. Well, you have three options. One is just like genetically, your skin is quote like youthful and that's good for you in terms of getting through society. And then the second option is you do show early signs of aging. And people are always commenting, right? Like even Sex and the City, the reboot, it's like everyone's talking about how they look and skin and this and that. And but there, it seems like most of them haven't, you know, had any surgery or fillers. And so that's like one option, but everyone's like has something negative to say. And then the other option is like the Real Housewives, where you do have all the Botox and the fillers and the surgery, or Kardashians. And then everyone's talking about that too. Like, oh, how do they succumb to the pressures? And it's like, you really can't win. Right.
There is no such thing as aging gracefully. Like when somebody's like, age gracefully, I'm like, according to whom you? Because if I listen to the person that commented right below you, they have a different opinion. And then the person below them has another different opinion. Like you can't live for other people. And what I would say is that people don't like seeing older women. And I'm like, I'm convinced it's because people don't like women in positions of authority. And in showing aging, it's like, you are clearly like more wise. And like, well, you have no more value anymore because like, you're not like this, like, and I hate to say this, but it's like, you're not fuckable anymore. So it's like, you know, very much so like property based and the fact that it's like, you are a thing, you are not a person. And this isn't to say that we don't shame men for how they look, like baldness is the thing that comes to mind quite a bit, but it's at such a lesser degree than what women go through. And women are scrutinized at such like a intense level, and you're never the right age, right? Because when you're young, when I was a teenager, it was like, oh, you're jailbait. Then after that, you're 21. Oh, better enjoy it while it lasts, because you're going to be an old hag soon. And then after that, you hit 30 and they're like, you're a hag. And it's like, at 40, you disappear. And you know, I would say that from my perspective, whenever somebody's being really judgmental on the internet, I always try to think back to like, you know, it's like, what would me and my friends say? And I'm like, we do not talk like this. And like, you got to keep reinforcing. It's like, it's either aging or death. So make your choice. Mm. I hope it's just aging, because really at the end of the day, like, it is a privilege to a degree, because the one thing I will say is that in a country where there is no universal healthcare, how much of a privilege is it actually to age? Because aging means that you have more health conditions and it is expensive, and therefore it is a privilege to age truly, because you need to have the money to do it. Mm-hmm. So there's like a lot to unpack there. But, you know, from my perspective and with aging, it's that it is something I think about. I don't like seeing my face change. I don't like it when people say, oh, Charlotte, you look tired. Whenever I hear about my friends getting treatments or any like, you know, surgery or anything like that, it's because they literally say, I'm tired of people telling me I look tired, which is so depressing, because they're like, I just want people to get off my back. And so I think that that's something that it's why I don't really do anything yet. I know a lot of people my age, I'm very young, but a lot of people my age, my skin tone, are getting all sorts of things done. And I'm like, I just need to see what's going to happen. And it's almost like, I use skincare, I use the things that I use, but I'm like, I just need to kind of see what's going to happen, because it is so much pressure and it's almost untenable. And I don't know what the solution is, other than like, we have to stop looking at ourselves on our selfie cameras all the time.
Yeah. I feel like it needs to be part of a bigger shift when it comes to this whole like aging conversation, because there's so much like vagueness. I think especially for women, like when we're asked about our age, it's like you play the guessing game, like, well, how old do you think I am? Which I'm like, oh my God, here we go.
Yeah.
Or like, especially amongst Black people, there's always that conversation about like, oh, you don't look your age.
Yeah.
But I feel like it kind of plays into, you know,
everyone looks exactly the age they are. That is reality. It's like people said, like, I remember I once got this comment, because I was talking about microneedling, and one comment was like, wow, I thought you were at least in your mid 40s. And then the next comment was like, wow, I thought you were 25. And I'm like, nobody knows what any age is actually supposed to look like.
Right.
Y'all don't know. Nobody knows. I look 35 because I am 35.
Yeah. Thank you.
Conversation over. And like, it is a backhanded compliment when you say you look good for your age, because the idea is that you're not attractive or that you're not beautiful. You don't have value when you're older.
Yeah. Right. It's really depressing.
It's super depressing. And I don't have a solution, because it's like a cultural shift, but I think part of it is we have to take the shame out of beauty. We have to take these backhanded compliments out, and we have to change. I change on how I speak. I correct people. When somebody's like, oh, you don't look 35. I'm like, what's wrong with looking 35? And I make them a little bit uncomfortable with that. The next time they go to say that, maybe they don't.
Yeah. Great comeback.
35 is so young. You're not even middle-aged. It's literally defined.
It's just all crazy. When I turned 30, and I'm almost 40, but when I turned 30, it was like, I started getting that, like, oh my God, 30. You don't like, I'm like, wait, am I supposed to look and feel like something other than I don't know. It was just like very weird. And now that I'm almost 40, it's like looking back, and 30 is so young. So even for people to have that mindset that like you should look a certain way, or it has a significance.
Exactly. And I just think it's really, she looks terrible for her age. Is like, I want to like, actually, it makes me murderous in terms of like my rage, because I'm like, you have no idea what this person went through. You have no idea what they lived through. Genetics are, you have no idea what their socioeconomic status is. You have no idea, like, honestly, aging in society, when you're, it's brave to do it when you're in Hollywood. Like, it's fucking depressing, because you're literally just existing. And for Sarah Jessica Parker to just exist, like the things people say about her on the internet, I'm like, y'all are going to be old one day, you dumb dumb.
I know. That's the thing that's like crazy. It's like people just don't realize it.
And we grapple with it as a company, because like, listen, like I want to ease into things. I don't want to like dive head first. Like I want my skin to look the best that it can look and also be the most comfortable it can be, because, you know, when your skin gets older, it does dry out and that's very uncomfortable. But it's like, how do we not play into the fear of aging and make it more of an experience where it's like, this is the histological effect of what's going to happen if you use this. Make a decision based off whether you want that or not, but it's not like your wrinkles are showing, erase them. Like yeah. That's not, there's a way that we can change how we talk about things, because, you know, the fear of aging is not, you know, just for women. I mean, look at all the work that Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk have done, right?
Like, no, have they?
Yeah. No. And they, okay. I mean, not to pass judgment. Well, I guess I am passing to pass judgment. But it's like, you know, I think that it's definitely not reserved for just women. It's just the pressure for women and also the expense for women. And it's already expensive being a woman, and we make less, and then you have children and your body changes. And I'm like, can we get a break and can we not be mean to each other? Thank you. That's my TED talk.
Yeah. Yeah. Here for it. Mm-hmm. So as dietitians, we're always being asked about like, what foods can you eat for like skincare? And like, honestly, there isn't that much research that I've come across when it comes to this. Have you come across anything related to like food or supplements? I feel like usually like dairy and chocolate for whatever reason are like tied to skincare. I think maybe because like for people going through puberty, you know, like they ate these foods and it triggered acne. I don't know, but
allergic. Like I'm allergic. You're going to feel so bad for me in a minute. I'm allergic to garlic.
Oh, yeah, that sucks. Yeah.
Thank you for your sympathy. I started freaking out. I'm getting weird rashes. And so I think that like to say that there's no connection to food and skin, I think it's more, it's like, is your body like if you drink a lot, like I don't look good if I go out on a week bender, I look terrible, but that's okay. Like, cause I just look tired and I look like, you know, dehydrated because I am. And also there's probably just like my eyes probably just rooted as soulless. So that probably doesn't help with the whole aesthetic.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's things like that where it's related to it. But in terms of like supplements, I find it really hard because people love their collagen smoothies and I don't want to stop them from drinking. If you like it and if your source is okay and ethical and you're fine with the ethics of it, like do your thing. But I think it's really hard to talk about, say, taking a probiotic for the health of your skin, because it's like, that is such a complex mechanism. And if it was that effective, then probably a pharmaceutical company would have taken that upon themselves. And then you look at something like Accutane, which basically kills the oil glands in like your skin. And it's very, very effective for deep, deep cystic persistent acne that, you know, Accutane is not for everyone. There are dangers associated with it. Absolutely. I'm not minimizing that, but it's pretty incredible if it's used in the right way and in the right setting and in moderation. So it's like, of course you can eat things that then have a result on your skin. It's just, I don't know if I've personally seen something that has really done it. I think it's really hard when you eat something for your body to tell it to go to your skin. Like your skin is like your protective meat sack, right? It's like, it is a vital organ, but it's like not necessarily like gonna go there if like that's what you take a supplement for, like collagen. It's just protein. There's some research on dipalmityl hydroxyproline, which is an amino acid, right? Like a peptide. And so there is some research that can help, but you can also apply it topically. I think that people are so obsessed with the idea of like beauty from the inside out. And the reality is like, it's your protective meat sack. Like, are you going to try to like fix like the outside of your car by putting something inside of it? Like, no, to like pass through all of that. It's like, no, you just like clean the outside of your car and you shine that up. And so it's like, that's how I kind of see it. Or I'm like, it's the shell. Like you can fix the shell from the outside.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So in terms of safety of these skincare products, and especially as you mentioned in the US, things sometimes can feel a little more lax, like something's banned in Europe, but it's fine here. What are the things that we should be looking out for? Is there a website that you recommend checking?
So I will say that there's a lot of misinformation out there. Sites like the EWG are not very reliable. They tend to take data, and I'm sure you notice this with food as well, with the Dirty Dozen, but they cherry pick science. And either you go by science or you're a pseudoscientist. And when you cherry pick science, you become a pseudoscientist. And so if for me. I'm not a scientist, but this is the one thing that every scientist has told me, and dermatologists and anybody that works in STEM. It's like, either you use science to help you form an opinion, or you have your opinion and then you're trying to use data to back it up. And when you're in that realm, like, that is a very scary realm to be in. So, you know, the EWG, I do think they do some good things in terms of environmental protection. And, like, you know, I believe that they were a big part of the Modernization of Cosmetics Regulation Act, which is creating more standards within the FDA to have things more codified, because the law in the United States is you have to have a safe cosmetic. That definition is too broad for my taste. I think we need everybody to follow good manufacturing practices, that contract manufacturers where you make these big scale products, like, they have to be registered with the FDA. If there's a problem, the FDA has to be able to go in there. Like, there are things like that that should be done. And that has just been, it actually just got signed into law, called MACRA, by Biden on December 29th. What's interesting, though, is that a lot of these organizations and a lot of these beauty companies aren't applauding the FDA for taking these steps, which makes me feel like it's just marketing for them, because I'm like, wait, we finally have progress. And it's like crickets. And I'm like, because it doesn't help you sell your mascara. And so I don't love apps that assign toxicity ratings to things, because when you actually look at the citations, half the time it's like, okay, the study is a rat that ingested like 100 gallons of it. And I'm like, oral gas. Savage, when you foie gras a being with an ingredient, is very different than me applying two pumps on my face.
Yeah, totally. And so,
endocrine disruption is a bit harder. I mean, y'all probably know far more than me on, like, food and all the stuff that people get really worried about there. But it's like, I remember the whole soy debate and, like, isoflavones and things like that. It's like, those are endocrine disruptors, but it doesn't mean good or bad if you look at kind of like the overall effect, et cetera. And then it's like, you look at skincare, people talk about endocrine disruption. And I'm like, yeah, but all these brands are using soy and isoflavones. So, like, how, like, what are we talking about here? And is the thing for me with safety is, like, is somebody trying to sell me something, and are they trying to scare me into buying it because fear is an incredible motivator to get me to buy? Or have they really done the work to make sure that their product is more safe, not using things like nature fallacies? Just because something is natural does not make it safe. It does not.
Right. Thank
you. Mercury is natural. Mercury is natural. I don't want to eat mercury. I'm good. Yeah. Don't want to put in either. And so I think that that's kind of how I approach safety, and understanding that, you know, regulation is getting better. The reason why regulation in Europe is better is because they do a lot of pre-market vetting. Whereas in the US, like, I can go and sell my products on Etsy tomorrow. I can go sell it on a direct-to-consumer site tomorrow, right? Like, it's just, there's more gray areas. And so what I would say is the best way to find safe products is just ask them, are you, like, where are you manufacturing it? Are you using good manufacturing practices? Do you have a lot in batch number? What is the expiration date? Have you done any stability testing? Are you using preservatives? You want preservatives. You want preservatives. Because mold is really, can be really scary.
Right. Yeah. It's always so, like yeah.
Things like that.
So you're saying there's no website to go to like, okay.
You can go to the FDA's website and see what they're recalling. That's always interesting. I would say, like, the thing is, like, there's EWG, there's Yuka, there's Skin Deep, there's Safe Cosmetics. I've gone to all of those, and, like, half the time I'm like, the studies that they use as citations aren't even related to the product or the ingredient. So I'm like, that's a bunch of bullshit. And then they say things like, things are banned in Europe. And then I go and I'm like, it's not banned in Europe. It's just a prescription drug, just like it is in the United States.
Oh, wow.
And parabens are not banned in Europe. Like, justice for parabens, okay? Long chain parabens are banned, and those are increasingly being phased out of skincare in the US. And I do think they should be taken out of skincare in the US. But that's like saying that soy should be banned rather than, like, some, like, derivative of soy that might be dangerous. We need to stop collapsing things and taking the nuance out of things, because you're scaring people. And then they're proselytizing that, and they're sharing that gospel with everyone because they're trying to protect their community. And so I don't think, quite frankly, I do not think that clean beauty brands fully understand the ramifications. I don't think that anyone's malicious in doing this. I think you start in this because you have good intentions. I fully believe that. But it's like, now that we're seeing the ramifications, like, we need to roll it back. And I think the EWG needs to undo a lot of the harm that they've done and a lot of the fear that they've put into people without actually providing more safety.
Yeah. And also, like, some of these companies are making so much money by positioning themselves as like non-toxic, clean beauty. And this translates into the food space as well, because there's like the clean eating, the, you know, whatever, these ingredients. And it's the same thing. It's like, is this actually based in science? Another big one is like sustainable. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten a skincare product that's, you know, marketed as sustainable, and it comes in like a bunch of plastic wrapped up. It's a huge box that can't fit through my door. I literally just got another package while we were recording. And it's like, are y'all scamming people? Because it's giving scam.
Yeah. And I think that that's all part of like the same like kind of story. And the thing where I'm like, is somebody trying to sell you something, or are they actually doing the work? And it's like, you know, I like to say that there is no such thing as sustainability, and that kind of like table sets things. Everything that you do and every purchase that you make, that is consumption. So decide whether you really want it or need it, right? Versus trying to buy something just based off sustainability. But I am starting to see customers holding brands to account in terms of sustainability claims. I don't know if you guys saw that Glossier launched a deodorant today, and no. It came in a plastic package with plastic refill pieces. And everyone was like, wait, that's not sustainable. And the thing is, you can have that packaging, right? Say there's a refill system, so you have cost savings, but brands just can't say things are sustainable just because it's a refill, right? And so that was really interesting to me, where I was like, you know, brands need to be more careful about when they claim sustainability, because consumers are becoming aware much more quickly on the sustainability front. Because I think it's easier to understand than they are on the safety front, right? Because we can talk about aluminum-based deodorant, and the fact that the guy that literally did the study that showed a small causal link between aluminum antiperspirants and breast cancer, he literally was like, I wasn't saying that it causes breast cancer. We need like 1,000 more studies to actually do that. He's like, it upsets me that people are selling products based off of this.
Yeah. Yes.
And then there's like, there's a whole industry because of this. Yeah. And so with alternatives, by the way, that haven't been tested for breast cancer. So you like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's just what it, we keep going on this wheel of, you know, it's just, it's a great marketing pitch. The idea of don't trust the government, trust us, the corporation we're keeping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason,
it's a good way of looking at it.
It's really compelling. It's like, we're a small brand that's like, and it's like half the time they have investments from like huge companies, or they themselves are actually like run by like big companies. And it's just like the most bizarre value proposition to me. Cause I'm like, why would you trust a company that literally just needs to make money in order to survive versus the government institution? And I understand people don't trust the government in many ways, especially medical institutions. You know, I am a white lady, so I have a lot of privilege, but like as a woman, like I had maybe like 15 years of like atrocious period pain that nobody believed and said it was normal. It's not. So I understand not always trusting the institutions, but I'm like, I also wouldn't go trust a company as somebody who runs.
Yeah. I mean, well, first of all, the interesting thing about your company is I didn't even know it was your company. You don't really promote it that much.
It's in my bio.
Oh, okay. Well, like not on your page. Is the only way I realized it was your company because Hailey Bieber had said that your moisturizer. Anyway, she had said that it was her favorite product. And I somehow saw that. And then I see it on your page. I'm like, oh, wait, this is your company. Cool. So then I tried it. And I, by the way, love it. Everybody, you have to try it. Sorry. How do you say it?
Instant Angel.
Instant Angel. Okay.
Love that.
I got it wrong. But yes, everything you're saying makes total sense. I have one question back to sunscreen. So how do you convince your partner to wear sunscreen or to do anything for their skin? Because like my husband is just not here for it.
I mean, the way that I've gotten partners in the past to like wash their faces, I'm like, you think it's gross to not wash your body, but you avoid your face, the thing that's exposed all day long to these New York streets. I'm like, you want to bring the street into your pillow? That's weird.
Right.
And also because like they're like hygiene flag a lot, like because like they would like work out or whatever, and they'd be like, need to like, you know, shower or whatever. And I'm like, but you're like avoiding this part, like the part that I have to be exposed to. Rude. That actually got them to start washing their face. And I think with that is just like simplicity. It's like a sunscreen and moisturizer. And when they figure that out, they're like, oh, then I'll just use them as a two-in-one. And I'm like, yeah. Exactly. Like you love a three-in-one shampoo, body wash,
does your tech conditioner, like whatever, like they love like a collapsed thing. At least people that I've dated, not everyone. I've dated a few people who are very obsessed with skincare and would just steal things from me. So I would say is like just doing that piece. And then also it's like, do you like your face now? Okay. Using this will maintain the face for longer.
Yeah. The face that you have. Yeah.
Love that. So in wrapping, can you talk to us about this podcast that you were telling us about before? You might be starting a podcast. It sounds fascinating. Tell us more.
So my co-founder Joyce and I are doing a deep dive look into the clean living movement, because I think we really want to understand the motivations and why things are the way they are. And mm-hmm. So when you're looking at clean living, I think that the way that we use it today, I do have to believe that people are using it with good intentions, but the actual roots of it are pretty nefarious. And it has to do with the ideas of purity of the body. And there's like the ties to religion, but also the ties to eugenics and maintaining a clean population, which stems back to John Harvey Kellogg, who is really kind of, I would say, the person that was one of the bigger proponents in this movement, because he was a doctor and used science to justify a lot of really fucked up ideals. And eugenics actually is using science to justify racism. And so looking at that, seeing how that actually built out a lot of our food policy in the United States, which eventually ultimately impacted the wellness and beauty industry, and really trying to kind of look at it from an empathetic lens, because at the end of the day, I'm very much so of the mindset that the only way that we can change kind of the industry as a whole is if we create an open space where people can take accountability, maybe admit they were wrong, but we don't have to excoriate them. This idea of like dragging brands, like, just all the time is really exhausting. And why would you change if when you try to change or admit that you're wrong, people are just going to scream at you? It makes no sense. And so for me, I really want to see change within the industry. I do think we can have it positively be changed. I love the beauty industry. And so it's really about trying to take kind of like a holistic look at it and where we can go from here. And so the podcast we're calling it right now, like working title is like, Do We Have To? And it's like, do we have to talk about, and then we're going to do like an investigative multi-part series into a singular topic. And this one will be the clean living movement.
I am so excited. When does that drop?
I don't know. We've written the first like three episodes. So we're going to be going probably in the next like 3 months. And maybe we will want to bring you guys on to help us talk about. Because we only get to talk about food. And for me, the way that food has become like a pipeline directly for beauty language is pretty wild.
Yeah. It's really tough.
Have you read Fearing the Black Body by Sabrina Strings?
No, but it's on my list now.
Yeah, you should read it, because she talks about this whole eugenics movement and, you know, Kellogg and all this, and like the history behind it and the beauty ideals. And it's more from like a nutrition and weight perspective, but this all ties in because it's, you know, the concept of beauty and how that's kind of changed throughout the years, and it's informed by like, you know, whiteness. And
poverty was demonized by John H. Kellogg, and eating this way was actually to differentiate yourself from poorer classes, immigrant classes. All these things. And so when you kind of understand the roots of it, it actually does make a lot of sense, a lot of the language that we use today, but then it makes you very uncomfortable. And especially for me, somebody who, like, even though like John H. Kellogg would have hated me because I'm like, disgusting. But it's like today, you know, things have like, you know, obviously shifted quite a bit, and it's really fascinating and really dark. And there's so much that we need to change. And so I'm hoping that by educating people, we'll kind of open up that dialogue and people will be open to bringing that into their marketing, hopefully.
Yeah, that's great. Sure. Oh, what a fun conversation. I wish we had all the time in the world, because I have so many more questions, but they don't like us making our episodes more than 40 minutes. Our producers say I got to keep within that. But hopefully we can have you back one day and ask kind of more follow-up questions. But thank you so much. By the way, can you share more about where people can find you, your company?
So you can find me at Charlotte Parlay. That is the French word to speak, which, as I'm sure you've noticed, I like to do. And then my company is Do Skin. So it's at Do Skin, DIEUX Skin. Thank you.
That's a wrap on our episode. As we promised, we are going to be giving away 3 eye masks, our favorite eye masks of all time, because they let your eyes move while you're sleeping. They're not too restrictive. If you want to win, all you got to do is share this episode. So whether you're sharing it on your Instagram stories, on your Instagram feed. Twitter, I guess, also can be a place where you share the episode. Make sure to tag us and mention something that you're enjoying about the episode or one thing that you learned. And we are going to pick three winners and DM you and get you these eye masks. So thanks for tuning in all the way until the end. Thanks so much for listening to another episode of the Food Heaven podcast. If you haven't already, make sure to connect with us online. We're most active on the gram at Food Heaven, but we're also on Facebook and Twitter at Food Heaven Show. If you like this podcast, make sure to rate, review, subscribe, and share with a friend.
Yep, our podcast is released every Wednesday, and each week we take a deep dive into topics like health at every size, food and culture, intuitive eating, mental health, and body acceptance. If you're looking for a sustainable and inclusive path to wellness, come hang out with us to learn how to take care of yourself from the inside out. We'll catch you next time.
Bye. Bye.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.